Podtacular, the unofficial Halo Universe podcast, presents episode 886, Reaching for Champion, recorded live on September 5th, 2024. Hello, everyone. Welcome to Podtacular, the unofficial Halo Universe podcast. I am one of your co-hosts, Duststorm.
I'm your other co-host, Godzilla T.
And it's been a month since we've been behind the microphones, and with the month comes a new operation for Halo Infinite. We've got a little bit of things to catch up on. We were chatting a little bit, catching up pre-podcast recording. For those that come to the Twitch live stream, you can catch those pre and post discussions on the podcast. A little shout out to our Twitch stream. And also for our patrons, they can get the VOD of the stream too. But since it's been a while, GT, we've been having a couple game nights still. I know I took over one of them. You've been hosting several more during our interim step away from the microphones over the last month. Mostly my fault. 1 week I was out of the country. 1 week I was on vacation, 1 week I was sick. I forget what the week before that was, but here we are.
I know 1 week you didn't have a voice.
Yeah, that was my sick week. That was 3 weeks ago. And that was...
No. I mean, we had a lot of fun. We actually played some of the new game modes. We played Headhunter for a little bit. I'm glad they didn't limit that to just one person per lobby.
Yeah.
It's still a free-for-all game mode, but... You can have multiple people playing. It's pretty much just like I remembered. I still suck at it.
I was quickly reminded how much I suck at FFA playing Headhunter. And I would imagine there'd be a way to make it a team mode as well. So hopefully we get Headhunter team because they did have
that. I don't know that it would be quite the same as a team.
They had team in Reach. They started with FFA, but then they eventually added team to Reach.
Yeah,
I'm just more of a team player, so the FFA is like, okay. I did win.
Well, funny thing is, my first game, I was actually in the lead for most of the game.
I actually won my first game.
And then this guy came out of nowhere, and he didn't score 10 skulls, but he did outscore me. Because I had like 12 skulls, and then I hit a wall, kept dying, and this guy, he just came around me and won.
That's part of Headhunter, is it can turn around in a flash. If there's someone that has a decent amount of skulls, and they just get those skulls and they're right by a capture point, then that's all it needs.
Mm-hmm.
My second game I played, someone did win within, I think, like 3 or 4 minutes with a 10 skull capture.
Mm-hmm.
They don't have the Skullamanjaro audio bit in here like they did for Reach. Maybe they'll add that later on, but that was the second game I played. First game I actually won. Managed to pick up 7 skulls and score to win the game. But it quickly reminded me just how much of a not an FFA player I am, and just I'm a lot better playing with a team. Give me objective, give me a team. My Slayer's gotten a little bit better, but I'm mostly definitely a team player, mostly objective player.
Well, today I reinstalled Infinite on my PC to see if I was still having the same connection issues.
Oh yeah.
Thankfully, I didn't have any of the old connection issues. And I didn't have any of the new connection issues yet.
Okay. I was going to say, does that mean you have new connection issues? That's good. You don't have connection issues anymore.
I was browsing YouTube and came across a video of a program that can hook into the game and actually track your kills and record video clips of them.
Okay.
It can do kills, deaths, assists, and wins. So cool. If any of those events, and you can pick which of those events you choose, but or you want it to record. But when any of those events happen, it takes a snapshot of the actual gameplay. It watches the gameplay, and then it saves a clip. It's actually pretty good.
So does it integrate with like the game bar or like the NVIDIA or AMD?
This is its own app. I'm still playing with it to see how well it works before I say anything about what it is. But so far it's been doing pretty good. I played like four games today. Took me three games just to get everything set correctly to get what I wanted. But yeah, it records nice clean gameplay. But yeah,
to check it out if you could share it with me at some point.
Yeah, I'll send you a link to it.
Okay.
But yeah, I was playing Fiesta. Of course, I had Fiesta Slayer, Super Fiesta Slayer,
Husky Raid,
Husky Raid and Super Husky Raid, all checked. In all four of my games were Husky Raid.
Do they separate Husky Raid out to Husky Raid and Super Husky Raid?
Yeah.
Oh, I need to go check that. Because before it was just Husky Raid.
Yeah.
So I guess the latest update changed things.
Yeah, they broke the regular random weapons and then the Covenant, the campaign weapons into two separate playlists.
When was that? Because it wasn't that way before I don't remember it being that way before this latest update.
No, before, like last week, there was
right.
Only two games. There was, it was Super Fiesta and Husky Raid.
Well, before this last update, I had to select Super Fiesta, Fiesta, and Husky Raid. Those were the three I had checked in Quick Play.
Yeah.
And then when VIP moved out, they moved VIP into Quick Play, and I forgot that. So when I went to Quick Play, I didn't see that it had changed to four. So I went in the first game, I was like, oh, it's VIP. Oops. So I removed that. Yeah.
No, but yeah, I was enjoying it quite a bit.
Very good. Did you get to play any VIP?
Yes, I did play some VIP. Actually, played
it on a game night. Last podcast. Nice.
I spent our first game basically being VIP, hiding in a corner with a hammer.
I think the one game that I subbed for you, we also played VIP.
Yeah.
If I remember correctly. I'm not entirely 100% sure. It's been more than a month since we had the last podcast, so I'm not quite sure what happened over the last month. We've got a new mode for Halo Infinite. The firefight has been updated with the latest champion operation, which has a little bit of a tie-in with the Halo World Championships, which is happening at the beginning of October. So I believe the weekend after that happens, it'll be the next operation, which I think leads into the holiday one, if I'm not mistaken. I think that's kind of the plan. But I did play a little bit of the new firefight, and it is on Reach-inspired maps. So we've got High Power, which is the... I somehow got High Power twice, so I played on that two times for the new firefight. There is the Argent Moon. Instead of Argent Moon, it's Ardent Prayer is the Forge version of that map.
Yeah.
Don't know how much of that is similar to Corvette. The picture that they have is just from the outside on Halo Waypoint, so I'm not entirely sure which, like, if it's a version of the map that is similar to Corvette or if it's a little bit different. They have the sword-based courtyard. I forget what the actual name of it is in Reach, but that one is a firefight map. The Lone Wolf, the last campaign level in Halo Reach, that's a map for firefight as well. And the last one is... the last two are not actual Reach maps, but Refuge, which is the... I'm blanking on the... Headlong. No, right? Yeah, Headlong on Halo 2, and then the Gyre fight, which is the Tempest Reach multiplayer map. So those two are in for the Firefight Battle for Reach playlist. I'm guessing if you have a small lobby tomorrow, you probably start off with that.
I don't know. Kind of all depends.
Thinking I should be there tomorrow. I don't see why I shouldn't be. So hopefully I'll be able to join you guys.
It kind of all depends on how bad my truck kicks my butt tomorrow.
Ah. Well, if I need to fill in, just let me know.
I'll let you know.
Cool. So that's the update for Infinite that has dropped. Of course, there is a new battle pass that comes with that. The ghost visor thing. I forget what it's called at the moment. That's still in the exchange for those that weren't able to get enough Spartan points to get that unlocked. That's still there. Yeah, I think that's the majority of stuff. If you want to see the details of what's coming into the shop and what's in the battle pass as far as rewards, you can check that out on Infinite or go into the Halo Waypoint article and check it out there. Not going to read through the through the entire list. If you want to go check it out, there is the link. Some other things news-wise that's happening. We have HCS Salt Lake City happening this weekend, hosted by Space Station Gaming. So that is the last major before the final road to the Halo World Championships taking place in Seattle, which I will be in attendance this year. Don't have another baby coming, so that's not a
sure about issue that?
This year. Oh. Yes, I'm sure about that. So, yep, that's happening this weekend. I'll be watching some of the action before I head off on my work trip. And yet, thanks. In addition to that, we have the 10th birthday of Cannon Fodder, started by Grim Brother 1 10 years ago, and at the helm of Haruspis now on Halo Waypoint. It's been quite a while since we've, I guess this has been started on Halo Waypoint.
Mm-hmm.
With that, there is a new, I forget what they call these, but it's their mini, like, short story that they have the narrative for as well. I forget what they call it, but it's Halo, The Machine Breaks. It's a new little audio book on YouTube.
Started listening to that.
Waypoint Chronicle, that's what it is.
I hadn't got through it yet.
I think there's like 6 now.
Yeah.
Once I get updated on the books, we'll probably circle back around to these and just do quick little blurbs on these as well. Because now I'm 3 books behind at this point.
Yeah, that sounds right.
I think. So that's most of the news stuff. One other thing, actually. That was also posted on Waypoint. Borders closed, not getting in. That's funny. One of the co-founders of Women of Halo, I'm Generic, was in the spotlight. I'm hoping to actually get them on a podcast interview. They've been making some waves since they've gotten a lot of traction earlier on this year, especially within the competitive scene, and I think they're an HTS grassroots partner now. So looking to get them on the show. And I think that kind of wraps things up from a news perspective. One thing I do want to address that's been going around the community quite a lot across social media, YouTube, Reddit. I'm not sure if you're aware of this, GT, but there's been a big issue with MCC lately. If you've been in MCC matchmaking, hopefully you haven't run across this. I've dabbled into it a few times and thankfully haven't run across this, but it is an issue where hackers will modify your gamer tag and basically get you banned by doing some pretty nasty things. There's some memory hacks too on the server side that they're able to exploit and basically make it to where you're either firing your gun or dropping your gun or reloading your gun, and you're basically left inoperable. So there's lots of bad things out there. There's numerous of Reddit threads, social media threads, YouTube threads. So right now, if you're on MCC, be careful. If you're going into matchmaking, it kind of sucks that it's the state of where MCC is in, and the only response that we have from 343 is that they're judging the level of effort that they need to put into this and if they have the resources to actually address it, which is kind of sad because you have a game that's like, it took so long to get to where it is, and to have it just unfortunately be at the whim of hackers now for matchmaking is unfortunate.
Well, as a product that is managed by Microsoft, they need to get off their ass, find the resources, and fix it. If they're not going to fix it, then they, unfortunately, they need to shut it down. Because if they don't have the resources to maintain their product, then it just needs to be shut down. Because they are exposing a lot of people to a lot of risk. If they can get in and modify your gamer tag and screw with your game while you're playing, that's a door into your computer.
So it's not into the client. It's only on this. It's kind of like in the game.
Like I said,
server side.
It's a door. It's a door that probably will be exploited to get into people's systems. Right now, they're just screwing with people. We don't know how far this can go. Dust might have a better idea of it than I do, but. I mean, if they can get in and mess with something that affects your gamer, or your gamer tag, or your account, all it takes is somebody that wants to screw with you a little bit more to keep pushing that limit. So
it's only done within MCC. It's only done within a game session. So this is only server side stuff right now. So that doesn't necessarily lead to.
Not yet.
Someone's computer getting hacked. It's not very likely with it being. Well, it's basically
they could use it
just
for,
injecting.
Who knows what they're extracting out of that information too?
It's ingestion into the server. It's not extracting.
Well, the one thing I've learned about people like that is they're very inventive, and if they figure out that there's a way to make money on it. They get really inventive.
Yeah.
Yeah. But anyway, regardless, Microsoft needs to address the problem in very short order. Not think about it. They need to fix it.
Yeah, it needs to be fixed, especially that it's a game that's still being sold and matchmaking is its main attraction at this point. But yeah. Hopefully they put forward the resources to actually get this fixed.
I forgot that the 360 marketplace shut down this year. Had a video roll through my YouTube feed in July.
Yep.
Like
that happened. Yeah, that happened at the end of July, like July 26th or 27th, something like that.
I'd forgot all about that. That made me sad.
Yeah.
Of course, the community being the community have already found a way around it.
Really?
Yep.
What's the workaround?
Oh, you have to have a modded Xbox. It's not a plug-and-play thing, but they've actually found and copied the API for a lot of the information that was on the store, like downloads and stuff. And they basically have a package manager.
Yep.
That you can install. And it is a faux 360 store.
Okay. Interesting. It sounds similar to how the
that was Halo 3 months.
Sunrise works.
Took them all of 3 months.
So the Steam numbers, it looks like, since this has happened, hasn't gone down too much over the last... There's a decent fall off, about 600 players since it happened. But, I mean, that's kind of insignificant because it rises and falls with holidays and some other things. So, don't know if it's impacted player counts too much other than just, like, natural fall off. But it's still an issue that needs to be fixed. So, that's the news that we have for today. And now we'll get on to the main topic of the podcast, which is touching on Shadows of Reach. And Divine Wind. So we see Blue Team back in action, going to Reach. And disclaimer, again, I know we do this at every book podcast. We're not going to go through the book chapter by chapter or story beat by story beat. Plenty of other content that out there that does that really well. A lot better than I have time for. Maybe GT has time for. But check out the Installation 00 has some good stuff.
5.5, Laird.
Shadows of Reach is AO6. Also, check out Podcast Evolved. They've got their whole book club stuff, so check them out. They dive into it a whole lot more than we could ever do.
Very detailed podcast on it.
I almost went to go listen to their episode to prep for the podcast tonight, but didn't have time to. So I'm going to be relying on GT to help fill in some of the gaps that I have probably forgotten over the last 2 months since I finished reading both books.
So I have to admit, Shadows of Reach, I was actually very impressed with it. Whenever revisiting a location, you have expectations. Like,
sure,
we've all read The Fall of Reach, and you have expectations about what is going to be in the books. And they did a good job of hitting those beats. And some of them were very small details that just harkened back to Fall of Reach. They're the the opening sequence is the Master Chief with Blue Team and three Marines.
Yep, Marines.
Flight Commander, Pilot, and then I forget what the title of the equipment manager was. But they're doing a stealth insertion to go to Castle Base and recover stuff for Dr. Hollacy to help Halsey create a weapon to use against Cortana.
AKA the weapon that we find in Halo Infinite.
Exactly. Anyway, they're
made that connection.
They hint at what the package is, but they never say what the package is that they're going to retrieve. Anyway.
And even at the end, when they get the package, they keep it pretty
cryptic. Yeah, they never say what it is.
No.
They hint at it.
It's a box. It's a box.
They do say it's a cryo container and a box.
Remains very cryptic.
Yes.
Yep.
And then the weapon shows up. So what was in the cryo container? You know, I'm thinking of brain. But anyway.
Where was it mentioned before that Halsey made, like, there were multiple flash clones of her brain made?
Fall of Reach.
Okay, so it wasn't Fall of Reach. It was that early on.
Yeah, it was. It was in Fall of Reach. It was also in her journal.
Yeah, I haven't read her old journal yet.
But in the Fall of Reach, they say only one survived, and that's the one they made Cortana with. So
before they retconned it.
Well, you could look at it that way,
potentially,
or you could look at it like a CYA moment. Because
there's some flexibility there.
In the Fall of Reach, Catherine Halsey is playing very defensive to keep Oni off of her so that she can work and do what she wants to do. Also, in the Fall of Reach, Oni is getting a little squeamish about what she's been doing with the Spartans leading up to the end of the book, or up to the initial engagement with the Covenant. So, you know, she's been very guarded as to what she lets people know is there. Like this vault that they're going after in Shadows of Reach, she is the only one that knew that vault existed.
Which is why they have the whole bio gloves and
right
other things to get past security.
It was it was designed so that no one but Halsey could enter the vault. And anybody else that tried to, it would basically vaporize anything, any evidence that was in the vault.
And that survived. Survived the glassing of Reach.
The trip down, they had
modified
Pelican. This is where we get introduced to the Banished that are currently occupying Reach. And their purpose there is to find a portal so that Atriox can return from the Ark, aka Halo Wars 2, now to return from the Ark from that fight. And they have a little bit of issue getting to the planet.
Some
and they crash.
Banished and I guess it was Banished and Keeper.
Well, the Keepers Scouts. At this point in time, the Keepers have joined the Banished.
On Reach, yeah.
They're still their own little group, but they are part of the Banished as a whole. They do follow
to find the portal.
Well,
because they're still kind of their own group.
Yeah. At this point, they still follow Atriox's orders and his lieutenant's orders. And the orders were to find this portal. Well, they have three different groups within the Banished that are occupying Reach. You have the Keepers of the One Freedom, which they're a recent add to the Banished. And then you have two other groups.
The Legion of the Corpse Moon and the Ravaged Tusks. Thank you, Halopedia.
Those two are long members of the Banished. So at the beginning of the book, you have the Keepers just trying to do what they were told by Atriox and find the Ark. And then the other two are infighting over land. There's a group of pioneers there that are trying to recover the land from the glassing. They're trying to get crops to grow, and their ultimate purpose is to be able to sustain a mining operation on Reach because it's still rich in minerals that the UNSC needs. Stuff to make battle plate, their electronics, all kinds of stuff. So, I mean, that's their end goal. But they've got a very small window where they basically only have one shot to do this, is to restart the agricultural side of Reach, because they have to be able to feed the people that are there before they can move on to a more industrial type of society. You know, they got to be able to feed everybody before they can dig holes in the ground. So there's around, I'm guessing the numbers were between 4,000 and 5,000 of these pioneers. And of course, while they're on Reach, they were attacked, and they had been recovering weapons and explosives from the abandoned military bases around Reach. The introduction to these pioneers was quite interesting. You have Blue Team sneaking up on a Banished base, which is the Banished had.
Well, I don't think they were sneaking up on it yet, right? Because they were trying to stick to some kind of ravine that was glass, and they were trying to way forward.
And then the deal was after the owl crashed, they had two pieces of heavy equipment, basically a little dump truck and a drill, that they had to move across a glassed wasteland. Keep in mind, this is construction equipment; it's not a warthog. It can only move at a certain rate, you know, which is basically a fast walk, and not even a fast walk by Spartan standards, like normal people standards.
It's like a laser mining drill for one, and then like a like a front
end loader, dump truck ish type deal.
Yeah,
is the other one, of which Fred manages to use the drill as an anti-aircraft weapon.
Yeah. Hey, get creative with what you got, right?
Yeah. So, you know, Spartans can use anything as a weapon. But anyway, they're moving along, and they know they're being watched by Banshees, and it turns out it's the Keepers that are watching them. They're just trying to figure out, the Keepers are trying to figure out why they're here.
What they're doing. Yep.
You know, why are there four Spartans and three regular humans and two pieces of equipment moving across the landscape? Because, I mean, it's not like it's an invasion force. So they're looking for something. And the Keepers initially assume that they're looking for the portal, the same portal that the Keepers are. And then, you know, the Spartans are afraid or theorize that their plan has been leaked to the Banished to recover these assets out of Halsey's vault, which are honestly no value to anybody other than Halsey.
So each group thinks the other one knows what they're onto, but they really don't. Because at the end of it, they're after two separate things.
But they're sneaking up on this Banished base to acquire transportation. They want to steal a Phantom.
Yeah.
And in the process of that, they're coming up this ravine, which to sneak up on the base.
I didn't think they went for it until after they ran into the militia.
Nope.
Because they were.
That's what they were okay. going for when they ran into the militia.
Gotcha. And they
were going to take out the base, steal a Phantom, go back, pick up everybody else, and then fly to Castle Base.
The loader and the drill. Gotcha. Okay.
Yeah. So.
That order.
In the process of sneaking up on this base, they're in like the stream bed slash canal.
Yeah, almost like a dried up riverbed almost.
And in the process of moving up, they notice that shadows are running around underneath them. And of course, all hell breaks loose and they all get shot by Banshees and they have to dig in, and Kelly makes a hole, and they jump in it, and okay, now they're in this big drainage tube, which is what they were walking on, and surrounded by the militia.
Yeah, because when they got glassed, the parts underneath the top layer, or the top layer cooled.
And it basically just made a tunnel.
Yeah. So it's basically kind of like a big shell, and the militia had been underneath it.
They've been running back and forth underneath and sowing discontent between the two Banished factions.
Good old UNSC fashion.
Anyway.
Why fight the enemy when you can make them fight each other?
My favorite part of that initial confrontation is when the guy puts the Desert Eagle to the back of John's head. Not a smart guy.
Well, he kept calling them cyborgs until the person in command came by and said, "Hey, what are you doing?
Yeah, he was.
They mistook them there for being backup for their operation of trying to take out the Banished. And she's like, "No, that's not why we're here. We have more pressing things." And
well, initially,
didn't that one person try to pull rank on Chief and is like, "I don't report to you."
Yeah, later on.
But eventually, I think they wind up
helping them. Because it becomes a point where they have to. Because these pioneers have managed to come across multiple nuclear weapons. And they are planning to use these nuclear weapons. And if they use these nuclear weapons, guess who parks a guardian on the doorstep?
Yeah.
So
the Spartans are like, "Okay, we'll help you out, but do not use the nukes unless we tell you to."
Yeah. But there are some
crazy fight scenes at
New Mohatch. The Spartans in their prime. I mean, it's.
Oh, yeah.
You've seen it. Shoot a rocket.
Great fighting narrative.
Barrel of a cannon. Yeah, sure. Everybody can do that. There are a few little callbacks to other books. In there that don't really pertain to Master Chief's story. Like there is the Warthog driver that takes the chief and blue team to meet the leader for the first time. Her name is Belladista, and she's a Tantalus 10,000 winner, three-time winner. And in one of the other books with, or the final book with Spark and Ryan Forge.
Yep.
She is mentioned in that book by name. When they are talking to, when they're on the planet hiding to try to reacquire Ryan, because they think that's where the Forerunner portal took her. Turns out she didn't, anyway. But her name is mentioned in there, and you know they're all admiring how good of a competitor that she is, and they even mention how in one race two people were disqualified for juicing, and she won because the two people in front of her were disqualified. And then back in Shadows of Reach, they make mention of it again. And this is one of the few times you will hear Master Chief say, "Hold on," and mean it.
Huh.
When they collect Fred, because Fred gets injured and he has to catch up with him later, he gets in the Warthog with Belladista driving, John and Kelly, and John's like, "You want to hold on?" He's like, "Really? Yeah, you want to hold on." Just to give you kind of an idea of the woman's driving style.
Interesting. I'll see this name on the Halopedia article.
And like I said, it's a small detail that sometimes that stuff gets over.
Yeah.
And you have one of the pilot of the Owl, Mox Chapoff. He's a fan of her as well. And this is kind of one of the sad moments in the entire book. Belladista doesn't make it out front. She doesn't make it through the assault on the new Mohatch. She is killed by a grunt or an elite or something. It was kind of sad because she was a fun character. And just the way she was written, she was a really fun character, and I enjoyed it. I mean, anybody who can make a Spartan hang on.
Okay. Right.
Now, is there anything you want to talk about?
The reason we're doing both of the books is it actually kind of plays one into the other, which I thought was cool. And I didn't remember, I guess, that the Ferret team were embedded with the Banished. Like, I think.
Well, it's actually not mentioned in any of the material that I can remember.
But isn't Retribution where?
Well, Retribution. What was it? The previous engagements with the previous engagement to this one was their interaction on Gal.
Well, that was Last Light.
Right, which is Last Light.
But there's another book. Retribution was another story with them.
Right. Oh, yeah, that...
Because they were salvaging stuff, and they were trying to...
Yeah, that was...
avoid
they the... They were investigating the murder of an admiral in that book. And because somebody was trying to weaponize a...
The subspace drive, or...?
No, they were trying to weaponize a virus that is contained to a single world. The world has been quarantined because... This is how dangerous this virus is. And this particular admiral's family is immune to it. So they're basically using her to create an antidote for this virus so that they could release it. And that was being headed up by, what's her name? The AI from Last Light.
Intrepid Eye?
Yeah.
That was a Forerunner, and still is Intrepid Eye, which we meet in Divine Wind again.
Well, Intrepid's been busy. She was captured on Gal, and then she was transferred to a certain research station that we may or may not have visited in a previous game before we blew it up. She escaped from there, and she basically created her version of Oni. And we hear about it in a couple of, a couple of different places. One place we hear of it is when the Ferris are going through their initial training. It's a short story.
Okay.
In Fractures, I think it was. That's where you first learn about it. And then they continue that story in Retribution. And then it culminates in Divine Wind. But Intrepid Eye has been in the background guiding Caster. She has decided that humanity needs to be prepared to hold the mantle. Well, the part of that she didn't say until later in the book, I know we skipped over a lot.
Yeah.
Is the best way to do that is to eliminate humanity as it stands and reseed it so she can guide the human race from the beginning. With no preconceptions or anything, any of the baggage that we already have.
Basically counter the librarian's plans, but sure, Intrepid Eye, sure. But before we dive into that a little bit more, it was just interesting how they made that connection between the two stories and then it just led right into the next book.
Well, like I said, at the end of Retribution, Caster doesn't know that the ferret team has basically screwed him twice. He doesn't know who they are. He's never seen them. He just knows that they have ruined his plans twice. But here's the but. At the end of that book, Veda actually accidentally saves his life. So it's quite the tale.
And Gadagai is still kind of on the fence of like, I wouldn't trust these humans.
Oh, he never does.
Nope.
And when you during Shadows of Reach, you hear Caster talk about these four humans. And there are little clues as to who they are. But I mean, for me, it wasn't enough for me to put two and two together until the very end. I knew.
Yeah, I don't think
they were military. I knew these people.
I didn't know who they were until the scene where Veda came up to Fred while Fred was at the bottom of the shaft that they went down to get to.
The very end of the book.
Yeah, the very end of the book. But that was kind of like that. Oh my gosh! Moment for me in the book was was when Veda was met up with Fred and Fred knew who Veda was.
And yeah, they'd been embedded for like 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah,
this was a long plan, but it was interrupted by Cortana. And after Cortana did what she did, Veda and the Ferrets were kind of trapped. They had no support structure to supply them with anything. So they had to work off what they had. And unfortunately, one thing they had that they needed, or they didn't have lots of, is smoothers for the Spartan 3's augmentations.
For the gammas, yep.
Which will play into effect in the next book. But anyway,
yep.
Like I said, throughout Shadows of Reach, you get these little hints of who these people are. But, well, for one, they never come out and say it until the very end. And they give you just enough information to know that they're not really keepers, but you don't know who they really are. At least the first time I read through it. So that's an interesting little twist in there, because you have Caster, the leaders of the keepers, the one freedom, and you have Gadagai, who is one of Atriox's lieutenants. He's there to keep an eye on Caster to make sure Caster does what he's supposed to and report back to Atriox or Eshram, which I forget which one. Either way, to report back. And Gadagai is an interesting character.
Gadagai is a very interesting character.
Gadagai is a Sangheili Blademaster. So he is Silent Shadow.
Yeah, I was going to say, he's more just a Blademaster. He's Silent Shadow.
So he, for one, has a unique look at unique outlook on situations. And he is very lethal. You know,
but it's interesting how his allegiance changes at the end of Shadows of Reach, and then how that continues on throughout the interactions between Caster and Gadagai
and Divine Wind.
It's interesting to see how that kind of grows and that friendship
throughout the
develops.
Book. You see kind of a growth of their friendship and the trust that is developed between the two. But the whole time, Caster knows that the reason Gadagai is there is to kill him. He knows it. He knows Atriox does not trust him because Caster is a believer. Atriox is not. He has lost all faith in anything the Covenant preach.
Well, to Atriox, Caster is just a tool.
Exactly.
Going to use his devotion to get things done.
Find what he needs.
Exactly.
And the fact that in the final scene with Caster, he sets Gadagai up and gives him a choice. You can kill me, but
with Atriox
you will
present.
Die too. Yeah.
Yep. With Atriox present.
Atriox orders Gadagai to kill Caster in front of Caster. And Atriox has planned ahead. And at the time that Atriox gives Gadagai that order, there are three red dots on his chest. Gadagai wears no armor. So, Caster's basically, I have no doubt you can kill me, but you cannot kill
me with
the three snipers before you die. And then Gadagai learns who the snipers were, it feeds into his distrust of the humans.
And then Divine Wind. Well, I guess to wrap up the actual story of Shadows of Reach, they got the package, they made it back to the Infinity, they get the stuff to Dr. Halsey.
They leave the system just as Guardians are arriving.
Guardian shows up. Yep.
Some of the crew of the Infinity do get stranded on Reach. If you go back to...
Doesn't the portal close down after, I guess, they go through... Like, obviously, Atriox came from
VR. Actually, if I remember right, the portal stayed open until the Guardian actually attacked.
Right.
Anyway, and this is another callback to, which book was it? First Strike. When they
that far back.
Oh yeah. When John is on his way back with a captured Covenant cruiser, no less, back to Reach, they come across the Covenant unburying Castle Base. Well, when they're there this time, Caster and his clan are basically digging out that same hole that was created when they tried to capture the Holy Light.
Yeah.
The Slipspace Crystal in First Strike. So like I said, there's
That's
these little
connection.
Callbacks
wow.
throughout the book. And on
wow.
their on Blue Team's final assault to get to Castle Base, just that final leg, they do crash again. Banshees, of course. Unfortunately, Chapoff is injured and pinned in the Pelican, but he goes out with a bang, takes out two Banshees doing it. And while they're standing there after the fight, they notice something standing in the distance. Something the Spartans know very well. Something that was the first lesson John ever learned about being a Spartan.
Oh.
It was the bell.
It was the bell. Yeah. Right.
It was still standing there.
That's right.
And in honor of Chapoff's fight to make sure the mission succeeds, John pulls out his rifle and rings the bell 3 times. I thought that was just perfect.
Very chief thing to do.
But like I said, the whole book's full of those little details that,
gosh,
if you read the book, it's fine. It doesn't mean anything other than the meaning that it's there. But the fact that bell has history. And if you haven't read all the other books, you wouldn't know the history. But it's fine, because it's still a nice part of the book. They do enough explaining in the book that you get the meaning.
Dang, I should listen to those back to back. Once I'm caught up, obviously. But
you know,
that's a cool connection.
There's all these just little hints and nods to previous stuff. And it's done in such a good way.
That's cool. Well, on to the next book. I know we've dabbled in a little bit, but next book, I mean, we've already talked about going through the slipspace portal, and Intrepid Eye is
riding along.
Yep. Ferret's trying to avoid visual contact from Intrepid Eye, but Intrepid Eye has
portal
suspicions.
We haven't learned that Intrepid Eye is actually riding along yet.
No.
We don't find that out until they get to the other side and the lich they are riding in crashes.
And we meet up with the Spirit of Fire.
Yes. We get to hear about Spirit of Fire and Captain Cutter, and you get to hear some names and stuff. You don't hear directly from them, but Caster, as part of the Banished, exits the slipspace portal, and of course, being banished, he falls under attack. Well, currently, the Banished are fighting two fronts. They're fighting the forces from Spirit of Fire, but they're also fighting the forces from the Forerunner Dreadnought from Halo 3. They have been holding out until they can find a way either home or find a way to communicate with other parts of the Covenant, and they are led by a prelate. So you have 3 factions fighting over the portal. Banished are protecting the portal because of Atriox. Spirit of Fire wants the portal so they can get home. And you have the Covenant that wants the portal to call in reinforcements. So, pretty pitched battle going on.
When all of a sudden the Lich pops out after Atriox fled.
And this is the first, as they are exiting the portal, they intersect a broadsword. And seeing they weren't exactly solid yet, the broadsword kind of appeared in the cargo bay, or it's like, just like the pilot's compartment, which was interesting. So there's a little bit of slip space theory there. Two objects cannot exist in the same space.
Kind of tore some things up as it,
It did damage. In this, you get the first hint that you start to see Veda work to disrupt Caster's plans. as part of a decoy to try to get through without getting blown up, he uses her to talk to the human forces to try to keep them from shooting them down by claiming to be refugees in a stolen Covenant ship. And then you have Gadagai talking to the banished leadership there, trying to keep the banished, or having the banished protect them from the Covenant. So it's kind of a unique thing. And to get, the funny thing is, to get the communications officer's attention on Spirit of Fire, Veda basically calls in for an airstrike, or a strike on their position, you know, an artillery strike. And the luckily, the communications officer says, this is weird. But throughout it, you have the Ferrets and Veda communicating with the Spirit of Fire forces. They've had a recon they have a recon Falcon follow them throughout the rest of the book. And but the Lich crashes, the banished forces abandon it because they're busy defending the portal, and of course the leadership believes that Gadagai is lying about everything he says, and which he is, and they know it. So the Covenant shows up, and just as the Covenant is showing up, these creatures come out of the water. They're like crab-like things. Yeah, don't try to follow along. We're bouncing all over the place.
Yeah, we're not going through the book chapter by chapter here.
So big fight breaks out to, what do they call them? Krilly Dunk? Is that what they called them? Krilly Dunk?
Sounds anyway, about right.
They're like little crab-like creatures that they are definitely carnivores, and they like shiny things. Kind of like crows. They pick up shiny things to decorate their underwater home. But there's, you know, big fight. And then at the end of that fight, this is where Intrepid Eye makes herself known by hijacking the prelate's weapon.
Yeah, because it has a holographic thing.
Yeah, takes the, because the weapon he uses, it's a
hard light.
Hard light staff weapon, and she uses the hard light function of the weapon to project her likeness, and then she broadcasts her voice through the radio.
All the comms units, yeah.
So
it's an interesting, this book kind of bounces around a lot between the different factions and everyone trying to figure out what the heck is going on. It seems like the UNSC are the ones that kind of have the most clear picture, given what the Ferrets are trying to do. But they're, well, they're kind of unsure at first because of, okay, here's this group of Marines that are humans that seem to have, like, there's no military authority there, but somehow this, like, okay, mm-hmm. this person has some kind of authority just by the way that she's acting. So
there's,
thankfully, the person on the comms is, like, at least receptive to what they're doing.
Well, you have, like, four stories going on. You have the story with Veda and the Ferrets trying to disrupt Castor. You mm-hmm. have Castor's story.
You have Intrepid Eye's story. Then you have
the Covenant story. And then you have one faction of the Banished story.
Which is the brothers from Halo Wars 2, Vordis and Pavium.
Mm-hmm. Which, you know, after the events of Halo Wars 2, they are kind of low on the totem pole again.
But they're finding a way to make it back up the totem pole. And
yeah.
Yeah.
But it actually took me a couple of times to actually be able to follow.
Fully grasp everything.
Yeah.
And then they went to one spire that they got to one monitor, which only talked to Veda being a reclaimer, and then they were redirected to another spire to actually attempt to light the rings. All the meanwhile, like, Veda and the Ferrets are trying to, like, signal to the UNSC what's going on, but also got the guys like keeping an eye on them. So trying to deduce what their actual intentions are, and casters, like, we've made it this far. The gods are watching us, and are like, everything's happening for a reason. So he's just kind of like blind faith. I'm going down this path to light the rings. And it's not till at the very end where all this kind of culminates and everyone realizes what everyone else is doing. And at that point, it's too late. It's a nail biter, like leading up to the end of the book and how everything comes together. And I still get the sense that Intrepidi is not like the book kind of like lays it out that Intrepidi is done, but it's like,
I'm pretty sure she's dead, but not completely.
Yeah. Yeah. With how they described it, like Intrepidi is like trying to calculate all of this possible, but has limited calculating capacity and is trying to infiltrate and overtake the Ancilla that's in this last tower to get all the processing power that it needs. But it didn't quite get ahead of the Ferret's plan as much as it wanted to. So the attack on the facility, which happens to be the last communication tower that is working on the Ark, in this Epsilon section of the Ark. Yeah. How all the dominoes were stacked up, and it's like, okay, which one is going to fall first and come out on top? And then, unfortunately, we lost one of the Spartan threes.
Yes. Unfortunately, Mark.
Was it Mark or Ash? Mark.
Castor and Gadagai make it.
Yep.
Voridus and Pavion make it. The prelate makes it. And then Ash, Olivia, and Veda make it. Out of the plethora of characters, or... God dang, my mouth just does not want to work tonight. Anyway.
The plethora of characters in the...
Yeah.
Yeah.
They're just tongue broken. Again, another good book. It takes some twists that I wasn't expecting the first time through. Like Des said, I would
it's a very chaotic book.
Yes, it is very chaotic. Action
happening.
I would have liked a little bit more explanation on the whole infiltrate the keepers thing. But I mean, it kind of in the mystery of it
and how, like, it kind of plays to that. How are they going to pull this off? Type of thing.
I mean, there were some breadcrumbs laid down in earlier stories, but they were just never really acknowledged. I'm going to have to go listen to those books again just so I can.
And now the Spirit of Fire is in play.
Mm-hmm.
Granted, I don't think we have any books leading up to, because Shadows of Reach was the last, or the latest Master Chief book, right? Because we've got Epitaph and... What's next?
Shadows of Reach leads right up into the beginning of Infinite.
Right. Or pretty close to, yeah.
Yeah. Within months of the events of Infinite. I should say the beginning of Infinite, not the part that we don't get to see.
Right.
Yeah, the next couple books don't focus on Master Chief at all.
Trying to figure out.
Actually, one of them takes an interesting look at a character I was not expecting.
So we have Rubicon Protocol.
Mm-hmm.
And then Epitaph, which is a Didact story.
Mm-hmm.
And then I forget what the one is after that.
Let me look.
It might be a while before we actually get a chance to see Ferret Team back in action.
So Epitaph is the latest one. You have Rubicon Protocol, which is...
Oh, Outcasts.
Which is the story between Shadows of Reach and Infinite. So not technically the latest book before Infinite. This one actually takes place during Infinite, at least the very beginning of it, Infinite. And there's a lot of stuff in that book that is referenced in the game. And then you have Outcasts. And then the last book was Epitaph.
Okay. And then Empty Throne is the one that's releasing next year. Yeah, so I'm on Rubicon Protocol for the next book. Don't think there's anything much else that kind of, I guess, stuck out it was a very active book and how it bounced around between the Keepers, Veda, Pavium and Vordis, and like how it kind of bounced back and forth between all those, and like everyone's trying to figure out everyone else at the same time. It was definitely on the edge of your seat book.
Pretty much definitely keeps you interested.
Yeah. So, and I like how Shadows of Reach just kind of met into this book. Like it was like they're kind of separate stories, but it was a direct feed into it. Like you could read one after the other, and it's basically one story.
Yeah, one kind of primes you for the next one.
Yeah. It's like you start the story here, and then the second act just carries it on, but now it's over here.
Mm-hmm.
So how soon after Shadows of Reach does the Rubicon Protocol take?
Well, it takes place on the initial...
Right after, or is it like 6 months after?
No, it takes place in that space before the beginning of Infinite.
Right, where Atriox...
Before the Halo Ring... Well, it starts at before the Halo Ring blows up.
Right. Okay.
And then kind of continues into that, but.
Gotcha. So it's probably some of the, I'm guessing, I mean, I'm projecting here a little bit, but I'm guessing some of the Spartans that we hear in some of the audio logs are in our characters in this book. Gotcha.
I'm not going to tell you any more because then I won't spoil it.
I know. It's all good. Well, that'll wrap it up for us tonight. A little bit longer of a show just because we're doing a book podcast, but we'll be back in 2 weeks for the show. Again, taking off next week since I will be out of the country for work. And we will have Fragment Friday, I think, for the next couple of weeks. So hop on to Halo Infinite.
As long as nothing pops up.
True. We're planning on it. We'll just put it out there for that.
I'm finally getting help back next week. Yay! No. I might actually get a normal schedule.
That would be nice.
In 6 months.
You've been pulling some extra time at work.
Well, I took a management position, so that in turn creates extra time to spend at work. So, you know, instead of having an 8-hour work day, now I have a 10-hour work day.
Hopefully it comes with a pay raise.
Sure.
That's good.
Not as big as one as I initially asked for, because between them offering me the job and then me getting the job, I got a big pay raise in between. So basically, I got the pay that I was asking for the management position before I even got the position.
Oh, gotcha. Okay.
But, you know, it's one of those things I'd already given them the number, so you can't really change it, you know.
Yeah. Oh, by the way. Yeah.
Oh, by the way, since you've already given me a raise to this point, now I want this.
Yes. Right.
No, so far they've been taking pretty good care of me.
That's good. As long as they're, well, I know some of your past experience with employment value hasn't been the greatest, so glad that they're
actually there have been some
trying to take problems, care of you now.
Yes.
That's unfortunate. All right, folks, thanks again for tuning in on Twitch and listening to us via download. We appreciate all of your all support. And if we don't catch you on our Fragment Fridays, we'll see you in a couple of weeks right back here on Twitch or in podcast form. Thanks for listening. Thank you for listening to Podtacular, the unofficial Halo Universe podcast. You can find our podcast on your favorite podcasting service and listen to us live every Thursday night at 8:30 p.m. Eastern Time on Twitch. Check out our website, podtacular.com, and join the community on Discord at podtacular.com/discord. If you want to play Halo with us, come join us for Fragment Fridays at 8:30 p.m. Eastern Time. You can find us on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube. Become a supporter of the show by sharing the show with your friends and family, or help keep the lights on by subscribing to us on Twitch, donating via PayPal, or becoming a patron alongside Confal, Pens Halo, and Prestige Ace. Until next time, keep on fragging trucks.